Welcome to Dare to Innovate. Here with me today, I have a few very special guests and looking forward to a very interesting conversation we have. As always, I'm Andrew Taylor, our president and chief revenue officer of Calero. With me, I have Calero's CTO, Simon Mendoza, and two special guests from KL Gates. So Neil, why don't you go ahead and intro yourself, and then we'll dive into our topic of the day.
Great. And thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having us on. My name is Neil Smith. I'm a partner with K&L Gates in the Investigations, Enforcement, and White Collar Practice Group. I've been with K&L Gates since 2017. Prior to that, I was with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission in the Division of Enforcement, where I investigated companies, mainly financial services firms, for a variety of different securities law violations, potential violations. And at K&L Gates, I represent clients in, you know, the whole spectrum of white-collar practice, internal investigations, Department of Justice investigations, SEC investigations, FINRA matters, internal due diligence reviews, assisting companies with compliance programs, developing and modernizing their compliance programs, you know, assessments on changing securities laws, and things like that, so, which is a very fun practice and a fun innovative way to practice law. And with me is my partner, Haley, who I'll let introduce herself.
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks, Andrew. My name is Haley Tran-Liptak. I'm also a partner in K&L Gates' Investigations, Enforcement, and White Collar Group. I have been at K&L Gates the duration of my career since 2013. Like Neil, I also specialize in government investigations, both SEC investigations and DOJ investigations, and then really assisting our clients both in resolving any type of DOJ or SEC matter, but preventing those matters from reoccurring or even occurring in the first place. So we handle a lot of SEC examinations, compliance policies, internal reviews as they may come up. And this issue, which we're going to talk about today, has really been one of those areas where we have focused our clients in seeing how they can create policies and procedures that will prevent a regulatory engagement down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about that topic. So we're going to be talking about the SEC violations, specifically when it comes to the recent fines around off-channel communications that happen within these types of organizations. For those of you that have not, you know, heard or read about some of these things, but the SEC recently fined $1.8 billion to 16 different regulated industry or regulated firms back in the fall timeframe, and have continued to press the matter. K&L Gates wrote a wonderful brief and an article on what it was, which is how we got introduced to Neil and Haley around that. And it's really near and dear to the Calero and the Calero team's heart because it deals with mobile communications. And so, you know, when we come to that and diving into some of the topics we want to talk about, you know, Neil and Haley, you know, why is the SEC issuing these types of fines?
It's a great question, and it is something that they are acting on now after years of considering how to treat this issue, right? We're in a, we live in a different world than when the securities laws were first drafted. Communication is different. It is continually evolving. And in some cases, companies don't have a handle on what their employees are doing and how their employees are communicating. And so as the government, on the government side, the SEC is the as a primary regulator for the securities industry, you have certain rules that you that regulated entities need to follow, right? And chief among them are record-keeping rules and relating to the business aspects of regulated entities, investment advisors, broker-dealers, things like that. You know, why is that, right? Well, if you have a broker-dealer and you have a question with why a trade was made, you want to be able to go to that broker-dealer, you, the SEC, or even you, the customer, and say, hey, why was this trade made? And you want to have all those records available to you. So you can see the whole history of that. And then you can decide, okay, was this okay? Was this appropriate? Was this improper churning? Things like that. You want all those investment decisions and all those communications about it to be recorded by the company. So they can be reviewed by company compliance. So the company can understand whether the employees are doing the things as appropriately to make sure there's no violations of the securities laws, no insider trading, no inappropriate, you know, messaging going on, no leaks, things like that, no coercion, you know, forcing your grandma to sell her IBM stock, things like that. That's why these record keeping rules exist, right? And they've always been there. And companies, but as we all know from living, you know, in 2023, the way people communicate has evolved. And you know, nobody has a BlackBerry anymore. Sorry, BlackBerry, but the people aren't just emailing, you know, via their BlackBerry or their desktop, right? There's emails, there's text, there's Skype, there's WeChat, there's a whole ton of things that I don't even understand. And people are communicating with business colleagues, conducting business that way, increasingly. And so, you know, why do folks do that? Because it's easy, because it's convenient, because it's sometimes more casual, it's faster. It totally makes sense. We all know why we do it with our friends. Why is that a problem for the government? Well, because you can't maintain those records. If someone is sending a trade request or saying, hey, you should buy this stock or you should sell this position via Skype or WeChat, there's no way for the company to monitor that. And there's no way for the government, if they decide to investigate, to look at that. And so this has long been an issue in government investigations. And it would usually go to how a company was treated in terms of cooperation. Were you able to accurately and completely respond to a government subpoena with all communications by the folks at issue? And it became increasingly difficult, starting overseas, but now domestically as well, to do that. And so companies would get increased fines, increased penalties, if they were unable to do that. Because if you're the government, how can you prove a violation if you don't have the evidence, right? And at the same time, if you're the company, how can you prove innocence? How can you prove that everything was on the level if your employees are communicating in a way that you can't track? And so it was dealt with sort of less formally for a long time. And then recently, now the government has stepped up how they're treating it, right? So now you see these major fines. Now you see these cases being brought against broker-dealers, you know, private equity firms, investment advisors, and things like that. And frankly, it's the tip of the iceberg, I think, because many firms are dealing with this domestically, not necessarily overseas yet. And the government is eventually going to get, the SEC will eventually get to all those regulated entities and figure out from them, how are you maintaining these records? You know, what are you doing to preserve this material? Number one, so you're in compliance with the law. But number two, so when the government shows up with a subpoena, you are able to actually give them the requested information.
Yeah, very interesting, Neil. Haley, why now? Why do you believe, or what, you know, from your guys's, you know, extensive experience within this, you know, these types of communications have been happening for a while. You know, as you look through the history of what we've gone through with, you know, the commercialization or the consumerization of IT, this is not a new problem. Why are we seeing this happening now?
So it is and it isn't. So if you look at the way technology has shifted, I know even myself, I look at the way I've communicated with colleagues now versus 5 years ago. The change in communication it's been rapid, right? And I think the real marker is the change in work that COVID brought around. Prior to 2020, you may have had people communicating via Slack, via Teams, probably a lot of in-office communication, and maybe a little bit of interspersed technology communication on ephemeral messaging or some other apps. 2020 hits, and suddenly the line between work and personal is very different. So you're now at home all the time. You have your cell phone in front of you all the time. You now probably have all of your colleagues' cell phone numbers. Now, personally, I think prior to 2020, I had hardly any of my colleagues' cell phone numbers. So now you're changing your technology, a means of communication, a lot differently. And the SEC catches on to that. And sort of to add what Neil was saying about enforcement, being able to maintain records so that you can prove whether or not you have had an enforcement issue outside of record keeping. In the 16 orders that came out last fall in September of 2022, the SEC actually had a section in each one of those orders that mentioned this institution has received requests from the SEC related to other issues, and we have been unable to ascertain that there were proper record keeping in place for us, for the those institutions to respond to those requests. So I think it is, one, tied to a change in technology, and two, tied to the SEC sort of getting frustrated that they didn't have access to these records based upon the change in technology.
Yes, this is repeat offense. It is something that they have asked for records in the past and have not gotten them. This is not, you know, a first offense type thing. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. I think that no one should be, at this point, people should not be surprised by this. I think that doesn't mean everyone is moving to deal with it, because it is a difficult issue. It is difficult to try to control, you know, how your employees communicate with clients and customers. With you know, everyone has a mini computer in their hands with multiple channels, right? And so it shouldn't be a surprise that the government cares, but it is also not a surprise that not all companies have dealt with it yet, and all should be thinking about this. Because the government's going to get to them eventually.
Yeah. What's also interesting that got layered on top of this is the DOJ is actually stepping in as well and providing some different guidance or opinions on what is going to happen or what could potentially happen. So can you guys talk a little bit more about what you're seeing from the DOJ recently?
Yeah. And that's a great point. And so the Department of Justice and the SEC have overlapping jurisdiction in the securities laws, right? And so DOJ enforces them from a criminal standpoint, the SEC as a civil regulatory standpoint. And so, you know, the record keeping provisions are not really, those are not criminal violations, right? So no one's going to jail for not maintaining client communications. That's a regulatory issue. But what the DOJ can do and what they've said in recent memos and speeches and things like that, they make clear, look, you know, the carrot is, if we're investigating you and we say, hey, we want to find out what your folks in China are saying to each other, or how are you communicating with your clients that way, or in a domestic insider trading case, like show us all communications your employees are having with these traders, and you can't turn that over, well, then you haven't cooperated. And that has a massive impact on your cooperation credit. Which can have significant financial repercussions, which can have significant ancillary repercussions in terms of what the Department of Justice can charge. And so the signal the SEC is sending is, hey, there are rules and you need to follow those rules. And if you don't, we're going to fine you. And what the Department of Justice is signaling, in my view, is, hey, you should be doing this as a matter of course. And if you're not able to do this and we are investigating your company and you can't provide us with the records, that's going to hamper our investigation. That means we can't go prove either that a crime committed by your employees or that something didn't happen, right? Because we just have an absence of evidence. And that is going to impact how we view the company, whether we view this company as a good company that deserves some credit for assisting us in investigation, or whether we view this company as someone who's obstructing things and hindering our investigation by allowing its employees to have unfettered communications with third parties that we have no way of tracking. And that really does play out. I mean, nobody wants to deal with the government and nobody wants to have to deal with DOJ. But if you do, you, the company, want to be in the best posture possible. You want to say we're on your side. If something went wrong, we are with you. We want to figure it out with you. You don't want to be in a position of saying we can't help you because these folks are running around doing whatever they're doing and we don't have any clue how they're communicating with clients.
Very good. Haley, anything to add on that topic?
Yeah, I think that the other thing that a lot of people who may have a touch point with DOJ may think, you know, DOJ is investigating a certain fraud or some other issue. And then when they start to negotiate a resolution with DOJ, DOJ also wants to look into their compliance programs and make sure not only do they have proper compliance programs that relate to the issue that brought about the investigation, but they also have proper compliance programs when it comes to record keeping, when it comes to messaging issues, and a host of other things. DOJ at the beginning of March issued a updated version of their evaluation of corporate compliance programs. And in that memorandum, I think there's, it's it, two or three pages that directly address what DOJ expects to see when it comes to record keeping of communication. And that ties into what Neil says, because if DOJ is coming up with a subpoena and there's no documents to support that subpoena because they've all happened on WhatsApp, there's never going to be a understanding of whether or not the crime actually has been committed. So DOJ, even if you are not evaluating, even if the issue is not related to record keeping, when it comes to negotiating a settlement, they're going to be looking at your record keeping policies.
Yeah, absolutely. So Simon, we've obviously seen a tremendous change in communications and, you know, specifically within mobility and, you know, different types of programs that have come out that some have created some of the issues that we're talking about today. And, you know, we talked about the consumerization of IT and moving to devices that are inherently less secure because they give more choice and give more options, which is, you know, what individuals want. What have you seen in the marketplace over the last, you know, 5-10 years that has, you know, exacerbated this issue?
Well, yeah, and I think Haley put it very well, especially in the last period since COVID, we've definitely seen this switch to that, you know, an acceleration of the consumerization of workforces needing to work remotely to use more ad hoc communication tools. And that obviously drove, from our perspective, outside of just mobile communications, things like unified communications move to platforms like Zoom, rather than replacing that in-office communication. And obviously, as Haley also mentioned, this proliferation of WhatsApp and Telegram, Signal, other off
pick a million different applications,
exactly,
that people can communicate on.
Non-regulated, non-tracked type of communication platforms has accelerated in a way which is clearly catching people's attention. Now we see within our business, you know, our customers looking to control not just the security aspects, but obviously the costs, and we see that across all of these platforms, but especially the corporate liable ones like Zoom. And so it's interesting how this has now come to a head with the SEC and so on noticing that these are platforms which is very difficult for the non-corporate managed platforms like WhatsApp and so on, very difficult to keep the records because they're not managed through technology solutions that are owned by the companies. And so when, you know, we think about mobility programs to help manage some of these issues, we need to think about tools and techniques to be able to provide the fleet managers, compliance managers, the tools they need to gather the records and be able to report on them in a way which is going to, you know, as Neil said, provide that documentary evidence in the case of a subpoena, whether it be from the SEC, the DOJ, or whoever, and in all jurisdictions, because we've been talking obviously about US-based, some of the US-based fines here, but as we go across the geographies, especially into Europe, there's going to be some interesting discussions about the balancing of the need for record keeping with the user's right for privacy. And obviously with regulations like GDPR and the need for privacy there, it's opening up some interesting areas of conversation, I think, which I'd be interested to hear from Neil and Haley on that balance that they see between the need to do the record keeping and the need for privacy.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil, Haley, that's a great topic to dive into.
That is a whole separate podcast all in and of itself. You know, it is an issue we deal with all the time, especially in international investigations where, you know, there are these overlapping laws and there are these privacy laws in different jurisdictions that make it very difficult for complete compliance with the U.S. government subpoena. You know, the government of China is not always sympathetic when a Chinese company has to produce materials to, you know, a U.S. regulator or the Department of Justice. And there are competing interests there that companies have to deal with all the time. And this is, you know, to Simon's point, this is why risk management, I think, is the most important topic for folks to take away from here, which is, you know, what's your risk profile and how are you going to manage that, right? Are you dealing with, are you a domestic company with three salespeople who communicate with clients? Okay, well, you have one risk profile. Are you a multinational company with folks operating all across the globe, including in place with very restrictive privacy laws like France and the EU or China or Russia? How do you manage that risk profile? And every company has to go through that and assess that. You know, management of the communications is key. No one can prevent a rogue employee from doing what a rogue employee wants to do. And the government doesn't expect that you can completely clamp down on every employee and infringe on their rights. If they want to go out and, you know, and commit fraud via fax from their home, they're going to do that. But what the government wants to see is that you understand your risk. You have put systems in place to control that risk. You have put the right measures in there to maintain communications, right? And that's a lot of things. That could be, you know, agreements with employees. That could be keeping, you know, data in the U.S. or in a jurisdiction where it's accessible to the U.S. Company so that it can be produced to the government if needed. That it always involves training. It may involve company issued devices that you know that there's a prohibition on conducting company business on anything but a company device. Repeated training, warnings, monitoring, all these things go into it from a preventative standpoint that companies should be doing now, so that you don't want to be hit or blindsided with, well, boy, we really should have thought of what our folks in China were doing on WeChat a year ago, because now the government's here and we have no way of getting that information. That's going to be too late. The warning bells have been sounded. And so, you know, what we counsel, what Haley and I counsel our clients on all the time is, you know, risk assessment, risk mitigation, have a plan, prepare now, have the right systems in place, because as expensive as it might be to do that now, it is 10 times more expensive to have to do it in an investigation when you're not just paying your IT folks, you're paying your attorneys as well to go through all this. It is a far better use of money to plan and prepare now than it is to try to play catch up later.
And I just like to give an example to sort of put a point on that. You know, if you receive a subpoena from the SEC and we go to our client and we ask, where's your documentation on the following? They go to their employees and their employees say, oh, we do that on WhatsApp. If we go back to the SEC and say, sorry, there's no documentation, it's on WhatsApp, that's going to be a very different conversation than if we go back to the SEC and say, this is the company's policy. They have a prohibition against using WhatsApp. They have the following technology in place to make sure their employees don't use WhatsApp. They require their employees to document all communications, you know, as follows. Unfortunately, you know, and this is how they supervise employees. Unfortunately, this rogue employee appears to have used WhatsApp. I'm not saying the latter example is going to be fine with the SEC, but it's a different conversation at that point.
So that's really interesting. I want to dive a little bit more into that, but let's come back a little bit. And Haley, interested to get your perspective is who's really being impacted by the SEC? And then Neo, I'd like to talk about, as the DOJ talks about that, who's impacted by the DOJ? So when we think about, obviously we had 16 firms fined, but that's, as Neo alluded to, that probably the start, not necessarily the end of this process as you continue to look at it. So Haley, who should be concerned and risk, Neil, is something we were talking about previously to this conversation, but that's a huge thing. Risk management, and everybody's slightly different, but Haley, who's really should be concerned or should be looking at these ahead of time?
The people who are likely to be the most concerned are the entities, the investment advisors, the broker dealers that don't have policies. Now, hopefully at this point, with the amount of publicity and efforts the SEC has done here, that is a narrowing number. From the large splash the SEC made with these findings in September, we expect them to start focusing on smaller or medium-sized institutions. And already we've seen some disclosures from such institutions stating they've received a request or an inquiry from the SEC. But now, you know, we're starting into, or actually already in the middle of the 2023 SEC examination period. And any entity that's being examined should be aware that this is likely going to be a topic of their exam. The SEC has announced as such during their SEC examination priorities they released in February. So we know that they're looking at these issues. And whether you're being examined this year or next year or the year after, there's a 3-year look back period. So it's important to get those policies in place now, because the SEC's already announced they're looking into it, and they're going to be looking at January, February, March 2023, regardless of when the exam comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. So Neil, as we expand from the SEC into the Department of Justice, does that expand the types of organizations that need to be looking at this, or is it still relatively narrow within, you know, what we would call regulated industries?
Yeah, that's a great question. The simple answer is every U.S. company is subject to DOJ jurisdiction, right? Now the SEC, you know, has regulated entities, right? Public companies and regulated entities that it oversees. And so, as Haley mentioned, all of those entities need to be aware and moving to comply, because the SEC doesn't need a reason to conduct an exam of a you know, registered advisor. They can do it whenever they want. They also have, because it's civil, they have broader authority to conduct sweep investigations, go after an entire industry, go after a set of companies operating in a certain manner or a certain country or in a certain industry. Fine. You know, DOJ needs a reason to investigate, right, to conduct a criminal investigation. That reason can be because the SEC says, hey, DOJ, we started investigating XYZ investment advisor, and we think there are some issues there, including record keeping issues. Suddenly DOJ is there and they have a parallel investigation going on where you have to deal with both entities, which obviously gets far more expensive, complicated, and the risks go up. So that's one factor. If you are a financial institution or a regulated entity and you're dealing with the SEC on this, there is a strong chance that if they see any activity that's a possible violation of the law, not just a record keeping violation, but, you know, some sort of insider trading or some other type of potential fraud, DOJ is going to get involved there. And that turns up the heat and the cost. Separately, any multinational company that is dealing overseas, you are always subject to a government investigation by the Department of Justice for bribery, or other violations, potentially money laundering, all these other things that could, you know, put you under DOJ's microscope. And that is an issue. And they have a broad jurisdiction and a whole, you know, and all the criminal laws to investigate. So it's really hard, unless you are, you know, mom and pop pizza shop where this doesn't impact you at all. Any company that's doing business globally or even across the US, you know, should be aware of this and should think about this and how they manage what their employees are doing, because you know, you are always subject to review, and you can't always control that. You can't control when the government is going to decide, you know, today's your day.
Yeah. So, Haley, you know, Neil started down the path, and what are the types of risk mitigation things that companies need to have in place? We talked about, you know, policies and training and you know, some security and software and things like that. What are the things that you guys see and recommend to the clients that they need to have in place as we think about mitigating some of the risk and some of the potential that could come from not having these things?
Sure. So starting off, a broad policy, or a policy that at least is tailored to the risk that you see within your entity. From there, you need to make sure your policy has disciplinary measures. You need to put some teeth into it. The SEC has pointed that out in some of their previous orders, that they expect to see discipline and real discipline. And that discipline should not just be for junior employees. That needs to go across the board to make sure that everyone is complying with this policy. The SEC wants to make sure that people are reviewing and auditing the policy to ensure there's compliance. So you can't just put that policy in place and then expect that 3 years, 4 years down the road, people are complying. You need to make sure that people are following the policy. And then, of course, there's certain technology solutions. Do you block the download of certain apps on someone's computer, on someone's phone? entities should think about, do they want to have a bring your own device policy such that they have almost full control over, you know, someone's, it's their personal device, but it's their only device. And the business has decision-making over what's actually on that device. Or do they allow employees to have a personal device and a work device and, you know, have to deal with the differences of what is allowed on each. So I think technology solutions, ensuring there's discipline, ensuring the policy is followed, and then, you know, starting off with the policy are all the four important points that entities should be looking at.
Yeah, so those are great. So Simon, jumping in here, when we think about these policies that, you know, we do every day for some of them, and you try to manage me as a risk, which I am the number one risk in your policy. But talk about, balancing the policy versus user experience is a continued thing that we see heavily within the industry. You have Gartner coming out and saying one thing, you have other vendors talking about other pieces around BYOD and other security policies out there. You know, Simon, give a little color on your experience within that.
Yeah, sure. No, you're absolutely right. Like our customers, obviously,
That I'm the worst violator.
Well, no, I do agree with that as well. Yeah. in terms of the customers and how we see them responding to this sort of challenge in the marketplace, they certainly are always seeming to need to balance those factors that we've talked about. So I think Haley's absolutely right. It all starts at the top with a data, a governance plan and a policy. And we need to make sure that that policy is well understood within the organization. But the need to balance the constraints and controls of that policy with, as we mentioned before, data privacy, especially with regulations across the globe in terms of what record keeping, what tracking, monitoring is acceptable, especially if we're going to be asking users within a BYOD program to put controls on personal devices. Is one balancing factor. Then we see a number of organizations who are really trying to drive a better end user experience through their mobility programs. They are trying to make, you know, coming to work a pleasure and give users the technology that they want to use and are familiar with to drive productivity up. And that can mean either choosing their own device or bringing their own device and their choice of operating system and what have you. And the need to balance those controls with the need to give users a familiar and, you know, productive work environment is an interesting one for us. And so we are continuing to evaluate technology solutions, mostly in the form of mobile device management, mobile application management solutions that will allow end users to get their work done in a familiar and acceptable way, but still provide the controls that we've talked about we now need within these corporate environments and on a global basis. And then finally, obviously, as a technology expense management company, we think about cost a lot. But I think Neil put it very well, and Haley, in terms of the cost of putting these programs in place is probably a lot less than the cost of not doing it. And especially the cost of not doing it when you then find yourself in the middle of an investigation. I think balancing those factors is a tricky situation, but I think Haley put it well, that each organization needs to understand the regulations that they're subject to and come up with a policy that is tailored to that environment, and then bring in a partner probably to help them identify the technology solutions that allow them to meet those compliance needs.
So Neil, I saw you smirking a little bit while Simon was talking. I think you may have some additional things to add on what Simon laid out there.
No, I was agreeing with what he was saying, and I was sort of thinking it is incredibly invasive when we as attorneys need to go to employees or the CEO or the CFO and say, we need to image your personal device. And some lawyer is going to look at your phone and your texts and your emails and everything else that's on there, because that's what the government has demanded that we do, or that's what your company has demanded that we do. And nobody wants to have to go through that. And if decision makers at companies think of it that way, like, wait a minute, Are you telling me that if I don't have a good policy in place, that down the road, if we're under investigation, somebody might take my cell phone, image it, and go through it all? No thanks. Nobody wants to have to deal with that. And it's incredibly costly. And so that is, you know, one of the reasons why, to Simon's point, you know, getting these things under control as soon as possible is critical. Having that separation is critical. Having a communications platform that is stored somewhere, not on your phone, not on your personal device, is critical. Having employees certify that they're not conducting business using anything but a company-sponsored medium is critical, right? Because then you can push back. Then we, you know, Haley and I as the lawyers can push back and say, look, there's no, you know, they can't download WeChat or Skype or whichever. You know, all communications are recorded. We have them all here. We don't need to go out to Bob in accounting, grab his phone, and have someone look at all the messages, you know, using keywords that may or may not be with his wife, and go through all that. Nobody wants to have to do that. And certainly not Bob in accounting. He doesn't want you to have to do that either. So, you know, everyone will be happier if you think of these things now than if you have to think of them after you're already under the gun, because by then it's too late. You know, you're already playing catch up, and there's no way to regain that ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Haley, anything to add on that topic?
I think that Neil summarized it well. We've seen the situation where Bob in accounting has to turn over his phone, and it's cumbersome, voluminous, it's expensive, and getting in front of it is important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so as we kind of close out on the session, I wanted to come back to a few topics. You know, one, we've seen a pendulum within IT, and Simon, jump on in here, of, you know, is it security over all else, or is it user experience and all else? And we obviously deal with not just regulated industries, but industries across the board. And we see them all, you know, managing their risk profile differently, depending on the outcome they're trying to create. And, you know, if we go back 5, 10, 15 years, and especially in mobile communications, it was heavily focused on security. You know, we've loosened the reins a little bit, but it seems as if we may be pivoting back there in some of the things that are coming out associated with that, with the proliferation of all these apps. We've seen customers come to us that are wanting to completely lock down devices in certain segments of their areas and give no user choice. But, you know, Simon, how do you balance those things, you know, as you think about it and as you, you help our customers go through that journey?
I think it's probably true to say there's no silver bullet. There's no one size fits all solution here. So, you know, as we were talking about tailoring a policy to the compliance needs of an organization, you can get pretty granular in that in terms of audiences within an organization. There may be, you know, particular, you know, we were talking about fintechs and trading organizations. So, you know, traders may be treated differently to other audiences within that wider organization. And technology solutions these days can be pretty granular in terms of the controls and how they're rolled out. And so that, you know, potentially an organization may wish to consider disbanding a BYOD program just for a particular limited set of users like traders and provide them with completely corporate owned and managed devices and separate the policy on those grounds. Other organizations may take different choices. But I think you're right that there's a pivot back towards security in the broadest sense of needing to have more controls based on these regulations across all of the audiences, but being a bit more flexible in terms of the user experience that organizations are able to provide their audiences. And, you know, with the technology continuing to evolve, technologies like eSIM, which allow, you know, both personal and business plans to be on the same device, organizations will need to continue working with carriers, working with partners, managed mobility partners, for example, who can help navigate the changing technology landscape, help to deploy policies and ensure that users are aware of them, are trained on them, or the attestations are valid and can be backed up by technical controls. I think all of these things come into play when balancing the needs of, you know, that user experience and the need for security and record keeping.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Haley, Neil, Simon, thank you guys so much for joining me. This was incredibly informative, and you know, hopefully the audience enjoyed it. And thank you guys so much for joining Dare to Innovate.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Stay on top of the conversation. Like and subscribe to our channel to get notified when our newest episodes release. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Dare to Innovate.